Hey, this is Tracy Burns from Wine on the Street. So I got to get on the phone with Dennis Cakebread, and he is basically part of one of the founding families of Napa Valley. His parents started Cakebread Wines. You know these wines. They're on restaurant menus everywhere. Their story is so cool because they really started out as legit farmers. His parents, Jack and Dolores, started making wine back in 1973. And so I got on the phone with Dennis, and I'm going to let you hear our entire conversation. It is super cool. Dennis was super great and chill. That's the beauty of people from Napa. So enjoy it and pour yourself a glass of Cakebread when you're done. Centani.
No, what's amazing to me is over the years, the consistency has been is amazing. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's why these restaurants are these wines are so popular in restaurants, because everyone knows exactly what they're going to get every single time.
Yeah, you know what the key is? The same people, same vineyards. And so our winemaker, Julianne Lax, has been with us for 33 years, not always as winemaker, but working here. And then our cellar master, Brian Lee, has been with us for 27 years. And so it really adds up. It's like having the same chef in the kitchen all the time. And then the other big key is having the same vineyards. And so we own 1,100 acres vineyards gross with about 560 planted. And the parts that we use that we don't own are under long-term contract. And most of the guys we've been working with for 20 to 30 years. And so it really lets you learn how the vineyards want to be grown and harvested and irrigated and pruned and let you learn them. And so that's what makes consistency, even though you're always working with different vintages. And so, of course, the weather is different every year. And so each vintage is a little bit different, but it helps having same people, same vineyards.
Yeah, so at least some of the variables. I always say it's like a big science equation, right? And you just change one little variable, the wine can be entirely different. But at least you know that some of those variables are consistent for you, because you're right, you cannot control Mother Nature and things like that. Do you, you know, I always found it fascinating that your parents, your mom in particular, right, wanted to make wine that paired with food. That's a long time ago. She was ahead of the curve back then.
Yeah, you know, the part of the reason it started that way is we depended on friends and volunteers. And so what evolved is a tradition of on Saturdays when we would invite everybody up to experience the joy of wine country and learn how to prune or learn how to label or bottle and stuff like that. We'd always stop for a nice lunch. And so she started out, you know, we started out with ham and Swiss and roast beef and cheddar sandwiches. But after a couple of months of that, you realize you have to go better than that. And so she really started working on the lunches and the food, trying to make them stand out more. And so then she started taking all kinds of cooking and chef classes and became quite accomplished as a chef doing that. And so that really helped us retain volunteers back in the early years, and certainly helped her step up her game in terms of the food she was making, so much so that she was the last 2 years, she's been the grand dame of the La Dame d'Escoffier, and so she's very proud of that. I needed to mention that, otherwise I'd lose good sun points.
Right, exactly. But I think that's so where were you living? You were not living in Napa, they were not living. Were you born yet when they started doing this?
You know,
you
the
were little.
44 years old, and I'm a lot, okay. Unfortunately, although I might not look like it, I'm a little bit older than 44. But, you know, the family was an Oakland family, and so the family business back then was auto repair that my grandfather started in downtown Oakland, down near Lake Merritt. In 1927. And so he was a farmer. The way this comes back to farming is he was a farmer, grew almonds out in the Delta of California, and he saw an opportunity to move into the big city of Oakland, started an auto repair garage, because remember 1927, people actually fixed automobiles instead of just by turning it in, buy a new one, or put in a new plastic part. And so, and it was very successful. And that's what my dad did. He grew up and was an engine mechanic and then became the owner and ran that. But he always remembered growing up, or at least working on the almond orchard and driving the tractors and harvesting that crop and stuff. And so he had always wanted a ranch to retire to. And so he bought 22 acres back in the early 70s from some friends of the family that had retired up here. And that's how he got started in the wine business. And so I was in college about then, and he bought this, and it wasn't planted. It wasn't a winery or anything, but it was some pasture, some orchard, some vineyard. And so he took out most of that and put in 10 acres of Sauvignon Blanc, and that's how we got started. But while we were, you know, when you plant grapes, it takes a couple of years before you get a crop. And so we were up helping an eclectic older gentleman, Norman Minnie, make wine up in his basement. He lived up near St. Helena. And so we were helping him for a couple of years just because it was a fun thing to do. And I was part of a young labor squad then. And after a couple of years, he said, hey, you guys should make some wine too. And so he helped us make our first vintage. We actually made it up in his basement and put it in barrels and brought it down here to age. But that's how we got started with 157 cases of Chardonnay was our start.
Oh my God.
It's this, to me, it's an amazing American story of a garage owner who goes and buys a little bit of land and start making wine, and then it slowly grows from there. So you can imagine my parents' pride in what Cake Bread Cellars has become.
You don't hear stories like that anymore, but what I find so interesting is you still actually do hear them coming out of Napa Valley. Like, you're the last remnant, I think, of the good old American farmer story.
Well, I think it happens now in other places. Napa is, you know, the Garden of Eden for growing grapes, and we're certainly well developed. You know, there's not much unplanted land here, and so I think that's part of what's driving people going to different areas and looking for different opportunities. Most of the guys coming in now are people who have just sold their, have done very well in other businesses, or just sold their company and have lots of money, and think it'd be romantic to retire to wine country and make some wine. But ours was more of a sweat equity kind of deal.
I mean, I do feel like there's a little bit of a divide, though, between the sweat equity people like you, like the Wagners. I mean, there's some old families that have been there from the beginning. And then you have these new people coming in. You know, unfortunately, what went down with Charles Banks was a mess. But you have all that. I mean, is there animosity or any kind of...
No, not really. I don't think so. There's a little bit of... You know, you kind of let people prove themselves for a couple of years to see what they actually do. But we were all the new guys at one point in time. I mean, we were the new guys back in the early 70s, and all of the a lot of people were very welcoming to us and helped us a lot. You know, the Robert Mondavi Winery is half a mile down the street from us, and they all helped a lot. And so that's, I'd say that's the tradition. That, you know, when we started, we were the 39th winery active in the Napa Valley at the time. And so Robert Mondavi, when he started in 67, was the 33rd. We started in 73, we were the 39th. Now there's, I'm not really certain, 650 to 700 just in Napa. And so it's a little different scale, but certainly... the whole idea of being willing to help people, and if people come and ask questions, you know, we're happy to answer and help them.
That's what drives people to your business, because I remember speaking to someone once who he worked for a hedge fund, and the hedge fund invested in Behringer's, and he got a taste of it and left, and now he runs, I guess, a hedge fund of vineyards. And he loves what he does. And he said to me, you know, when I was working on Wall Street, no one would come in on Monday morning and say, hey, have I got a spreadsheet to show you? Instead, he said, you go to wine country, and the first thing they say is, oh my God, you got to taste this juice. So just that sharing, open, transparent economy that you guys have created, I think, is what draws people.
Yeah, I would have to say that the wine business is the most fun business in the world. So I used to be in the, I got out of school, I was a CPA and got into banking and did that, and then ended up here in the mid-80s. And so I loved what I was doing before, but this is special, I think partly because it's agriculture. And so you get some curveballs that come at you all the time. There's nothing you can do. So you get a little bit of this stoic acceptance saying, well, you know, the weather you can't do anything about, so that's more of a deal with it kind of thing. And so that, I think that's really fun. And so you get to see the seasons. And of course, we're up here in Napa Valley, which is just a gorgeous place to, you know, live and then be able to make your living there and raise your kids there. What a wonderful thing. But the other thing I'd tell, I know you're tied into the Wall Street side, is I'm sure you've heard the story, and I'll let you complete the line, is, you know, how you make a small fortune in the wine industry is?
Invest $1 million or lose $1 million?
No, start with a big one.
Start with five and then lose it?
No, you start with it's an incredibly asset-intensive business. And so there's different ways of doing it, but we think the way we're doing it is a legitimate way, maybe pretty old school. And I'm sure, I know there's lots of ways of doing it less asset intensive, but, you know, we started, my dad bought 22 acres back in the early 70s, and now we own, you know, I mentioned it, the 1,100 acres with 560 acres planted. That's a significant, it's just gorgeous, because you get to go out and walk around the vineyards and see what's out there. And we have irrigation ponds that we stock with bass and fish for them. And it's just a wonderful way to, you know, so much better than plants and factories.
No, totally agree. Totally agree. So one of the things I talked to Bruce about was, you guys always end up top five restaurant wines. Is that the goal going forward, is to stay there, or what's on the horizon for you for Cake Bread?
So it's a interesting question. You know, what do we do next? Because we have been focused on making fine wines, and we like to be in fine restaurants. That started years ago, as we realized, you know, if you go back 25 or 30 years, a lot of people didn't know much about wine. They didn't have nice wine glasses. They didn't know how to store wine. They didn't know what temperature to serve it. And so that's how we started focusing on restaurants, because then you'd get typically nice glasses that were clean, no soap film. They stored the wine correctly, and they would serve it at the right temperature. And then certainly the food was better. I would say the culinary skills of America have improved a lot. Must be the Food Channel, right?
Something.
Something. And so we've always focused there. A lot of people don't know that. So we work on a strategic plan, and we set one up in the early 90s because we needed to define what we were going to be when we grew up. And so we set a target case production number. Because you need that because it ties into the size of your wastewater ponds, how much water you're going to use, what kind of power poles you need, what kind of permits you need from the county, you know, down to the number of parking spaces you need for employees, and the size of your buildings, and the speed of your bottling line, and, you know, how much barrel aging space you need. So there's all kinds of things that you need to pick a number. So we did. And candidly, Bruce and I never thought we'd hit that number in our working lifetimes. But we were working away, and once you know, in 2005, we hit it. And so we decided to do a very un-American thing, and that was to stop growing, but to make the quality, what we felt was the quality move, to just say, you know, we can make fine wines at this level. We need to focus now on vineyard acquisitions as our existing growers retire or don't want to do it anymore. And so that's what we've been doing. But the other part of it is we've also started up a new venture up in Walla Walla, Washington, a new winery there called Mullen Road Cellars. And so part of what you realize, all the business listeners know, if you stop growing, you basically die.
Sure.
Because all of my employees all want to make more each year, and my vendors certainly want to charge me more, and costs just keep going up. And so you can't do it just through price increases. You have to do it through growth. But I think what we learned from watching other wineries and other businesses and other industries is, you go, you know, if you just keep growing, sometimes you lose what made you special. And so our whole thing is, we've been working at this for 44 years, and we want to keep it very special. So we stopped Cake Bread Cellars growing, and are now working on the Mullen Road Cellars up in Walla Walla, and let that, you know, that has a lot of room to grow. And so we're hoping that as an entity, not just Cake Bread, but as the entities together, that'll be enough growth to keep us healthy.
I know you hired Aaron Morrell up there. What brought you to Walla? I mean, I know it's almost a dumb question now because I feel like everyone's going to Washington State, but why? What about Walla Walla did you feel the need to plant there?
Well, so what's fun is when we, back in the early 90s, when we made up the strategic plan, I got to write some white papers. And so you keep them and you go back and read them and you go, what were you thinking? Because we said, because back when you just remember, I'm sure your listeners have been in strategic meetings and basically goes, think bigger, don't be so constrained. And so I wrote these wonderful things saying, oh, we should go look at Italy, or we could look at the south of France. You know, I'm just thinking of me wearing white linens, having lunch in the Saint-Tropez Club 44. I might have that long. Or you go, oh, Chile might be fun, or, you know, New Zealand's good. They all speak the same language. And then in the 05, when we finally hit it and things were booming, but we were so busy, we didn't have time to go look at this. And then the Great Recession hit. But then as we came out of it, and so in 2010, we started looking in earnest, and you go, you know, we're not going to go to Italy. I don't speak Italian. I'm not going to go to France. I don't, you know. And so you narrow it down. You go, it needs to be West Coast. And so there's other wonderful places, the Central Coast up in Oregon and Washington.
Oregon,
so I started driving around and looking at lots of things. And then one of the things that happens to you when you go to start up something new, you make up a list of attributes and you make up a list of what you don't want to do again. And so all the things that cause you heartburn or high blood pressure that wakes you up in the middle of the night, you go, I'm not going to do that again. And so Walla Walla turned out to be the right place for all the things that you didn't want to do again and that you wanted to do again, but mostly, primarily because the people up there were so welcoming. And so I've got some friends up there and made more friends up there that were also helpful in terms of advice and places to stay away from and places to look at and helpful. And I would say the industry up there is no different than wine industries all over the place, but it's a lot smaller and newer, and they're certainly building their reputation. And so they were excited to have Cake Bread up there looking at it and saw maybe some benefits to us being there, and certainly wanted me to make nice wines. And so lots of recommendations and help and whatnot. So it's been a relatively easy thing.
I interviewed Charles Smith recently, and one of the things he said was, Cake Bread coming to this area validates how special the place is.
That might be some people's perception. I look at it, and I went and tasted a lot of wines up there, and they don't need us going there to validate them. They make
sense. Wow.
There's some great wines and some very nice wines. There's some wines that I wouldn't drink up there, but that's no different than in any other wine region.
Of course.
But you look at it, and so that was very kind of Charles to say that, but I think they've already proved that. I mean, there's some wineries that have been up there for 30, 35 years making nice wines.
Yeah, they're great wines, and they're different than Napa Valley, and that's totally fine. So you're making red wines up there. What kind of grapes did you plant up there?
Yeah. Well, so it's a Bordeaux blend. And so Cabernet, Merlot, Cab Franc. And for two vintages, we put in a little bit of Malbec, but we're moving away from the Malbec just because they grow well up there. Right now, I lease vineyards. And so much like if you moved to Seattle. And so, Tracy, if you moved to Seattle, I'd suggest that you wouldn't run out and buy a house right away. You'd go rent something someplace so you can figure out where you wanted to live.
Right.
Figure out the traffic, where the good restaurants are, where your friends are, where you work, all that kind of stuff. And so for us coming in to grow fine wine grapes, it's the same sort of thing. Washington is so different from Napa that it doesn't, you can't just run out and start buying stuff. That'd be not a good move. And it's the way we look at things down here also. Let's take experiment and do samples and things like that before you make the big move. But we've been up there since 2012, and so now we're starting to feel a lot better and a little more knowledgeable about where to go and what to do. So I've been leasing vineyards all over Washington. Turns out one of the most important pieces of equipment to have to make wine up there is a really good truck, because you're going to be driving all over the place.
It's funny. I've never been there, but Walla Walla is kind of in the middle of nowhere, right?
Well, some people look at it that way.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
But you have to drive.
You definitely have to drive to get there.
Yeah, they have the there's an airport there, Walla Walla Airport, or you fly into Pasco, Tri-Cities.
No, it's not that bad then.
So yeah, you can get there, but just the vineyard areas are spread out, and so as much as we all or much of America thinks of Washington as being very wet, it's because they watch all those Seattle Seahawks games where it's pouring down rain. Eastern Washington's a desert. And so very dry and not at all green or forested like what you see when you see Seattle. So different, very different area, very interesting in terms of geology and how it was, you know, the Columbia River Valley, just how it was created is a whole study in itself. So it makes it interesting to grow grapes and lots of things to learn about soil types and certainly weather and weather patterns.
Do you get up there often?
Yeah, about once a month. It's a great place to go visit. Walla Walla is a great little, great wine town, certainly developing more and more each year with nice restaurants coming along. And certainly there's a vibrant wine culture there with, it's got at least 130 wineries in the town of Walla Walla, a varying sizes. But a nice tasting area. You got to go and give it a
try. I know. Now I definitely got to go. That should be my next trip, even though I keep saying I'm due for a Napa trip. It might have to be to Washington State this time.
It would be fun. If you go up there, let me know. There's some interesting things to see.
Oh, I would love that. Thank you. I've kept you for a very long time, and I so appreciate your time. I know you're so busy. But can I ask, are these wines available, and can I get them? Like, can people get them?
Yeah. So we're in distributed now in 26 states. You know, it's a small winery making about 5,000 cases. And so it comes and goes in lots of places. We have a very cleverly named website that is like the Fountain of Youth. We always have it available. It's called www.mullenroadcellars.com, and so we're available online.
Okay, cool.
and we're licensed in many, many states.
I think this is really exciting for you that, that after doing something the same for so long, it's nice to get out of your, get out of the box a little bit, right? And go try and start over. Because essentially, isn't this is kind of like your baby now, as opposed to your dad started Cape Bread, even though I know you and your brother basically blew it out of the water, but it must be nice and feel very entrepreneurial.
It's a lot of fun. There's some realities to this. Let me ask you this. When you woke up this morning, did you roll over and say, "Dear God, please let there be a new winery out there for me to learn about and try"? And I would say, "Nah, maybe not." And so the realities or the huge benefits that we have with being here in Napa and having visitors visited us for 40 plus years is huge in terms of marketing and word of mouth. And so it's a start over kind of thing. So it'll do great. We make very nice wines. We're proud of them. All the wines that we've made have gotten scores of 90 and higher from all the good guys that count, so to speak. And then, So we're getting distribution, and it's only the third vintage that we're into. We're into to the 2014 vintage, and it's tasting really good. So it'll do great. It just takes longer than everybody thinks.
I know, of course it does. There's a price differential as well, isn't there? I mean, the Napa wines do come with a premium, and I suppose I have to believe these wines are a little bit cheaper coming out of Washington.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd call them cheaper, but the price.
No,
we make just
more value.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to. The costs are all different, and so when we go to buy an acre of land here in Napa, it's about $300,000 an acre, and up there it's about $25,000 an acre, and so there's that shows up in the price of the wines, and so we're priced at mid 40s, 45, 46, 47 for the Mullen Road, and so. Yeah, there's a price difference. There's Washington wines, they're all over in terms of price, just like every place else. But it's an interesting thing. It's been fun.
But arguably, it's a great entry level now for you, isn't it, into Cape Bread? Because Cape Bread is very aspirational for a lot of people. And now that you have this wine, you can get them in the family, keep them in the family, so to speak. Yeah. I mean, 45 is not so tough. The Dancing Bear, those are expensive wines. This is a little bit more approachable, right?
Dancing Bear is different. Tracy, you got to come out and see the Dancing Bear.
I've had the Dancing Bear. It is like, it makes you want to dance. It's so good.
Well, if you came out and saw it, and then you'd understand why it costs what it does. I mean, it's way up there. And
oh, really?
And all mostly rocky, and so it's a beautiful, beautiful site. If you go online, you can see it. We have a website, dancingbearranch.com, that we flew it in a helicopter just to show, because it's so drop-dead gorgeous, but you also look at the slopes on it and go, oh, I think I understand why it's so hard to grow up there.
Ah, it's labor-intensive, huh? People don't realize that when they go buy wines. They just presume they're getting, they don't get that there's so much that goes into this. But that being said, so if the Dancing Bear is my aspiration, I could get in now, the family, with Mullen Road.
Yeah, candidly, that's not what we're thinking. We're just trying to make a great wine out of Washington and then price it at make a fair return, keep it in business, but not, it's just good to have a successful business kind of from the start up there. And so it's fun to see it grow a little bit.
It's amazing. And I think it's a testament to the fact that, there's something we said about, you said it was old school earlier. There's something we said about old school because it works. And so maybe there's no need to reinvent the wheel. If you have patience and time, you could do some great things.
Yeah, and sometimes you wonder if this is the right way to do it, because there's a lot quicker ways to do it, but this is kind of what we have grown up doing, so we're used to doing it that way. So it's comfortable. Maybe one of our kids
will come out with some you know, easy way and have make wine in like 6 months or something.
I don't know. But there's many successful models to choose from, so it's fun that way.
Wonderful. Well, your wines are wonderful, so I personally wouldn't change a thing.
Thank you.
And I thank you so much for taking the time with us. And I love the fact that we could talk about Washington, because I just think it's so great to hear about all the fabulous up-and-coming places in our country.
Yeah. Up-and-coming should be fun. Go try a couple Washington wines. You know, if I was going to recommend a couple, I would try some Le Col 41. You know, they've been up there for 35 years or so, or the Leonetti's probably a little bit longer. Or there's lots of nice ones up there to choose from.
Well, Chateau Saint Michel's up there, right? The Col Solari is up there.
Yeah,
there's some great stuff coming out of there. You're in good company up there, that's for sure.
Yeah. Dennis,
you're pretty wonderful and nice, too. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
All right, Tracy, let me know when you're going to Walla Walla. I'll try and meet you up there.
I would love that. Thank you.
All right.
Have fun. You have a great day. Take care.
Bye. Hey, I'm here.
Oh, hi.
All right, I'm going to stop the recording.
Here, go ahead.